This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, artist Joe Corey. Welcome.
Thank you, Joan. It's lovely to be here.
It's great to talk to you again, Joe. The last time we spoke was quite recently. It was at the Ventnor Fringe, and you had thrown open the doors of your lovely home in Madeira Road in Ventnor for a fantastic exhibition. Do you want to tell us a bit about how that went?
It was really an amazing experience. We didn't really have expectations per se. We knew that the Ventnor Fringe was a fantastic event, really well organised. We've only really been on the islands properly in the last 3 or 4 years, although we visited a lot beforehand. And when we came here initially, we were thinking it would be fantastic to find a place where we could work as artists in studios in our own home and maybe find a place that we would enjoy displaying our work on a regular basis, and also invite some friends and people, artist friends that we know, to do some work with us. And then Ventnor Fringe happened right under our noses in Ventnor. We just thought, this is an extraordinary event. It's happening every single year. Everybody seems to be really enjoying ourselves. This looks like a good time of year to maybe try out the display of whatever it is that we're doing at that point in time in the year. And this was the first time that we did it, and it was wonderful.
So how many people did you have? Because they're coming into your home, aren't they?
Yes.
You're inviting strangers, in effect, into your living space. How did that feel?
Well, we had to make sure it was really tidy. That in itself was like a massive effort, because we work there as well as live there. It was a very important and interesting experience for us, because we were really aware that, in effect, we wanted to make our home welcoming, but also the work there that we show, we're used to showing in professional spaces. So there had to be that same feel to areas of display within our house. So there were two rooms and a hallway in particular that we'd spent quite a lot of time working on to make sure that we could clear that enough to feel more like, in effect, a more traditional gallery space. That way people then can read the work a lot better, and they're reading it as a complete and maybe potentially finished piece of work, rather than something that's sort of maybe in progress or sort of thrown together in the corner. So we just wanted to make sure that was easier for the audience to read. But at the same time, because it was our home, it was really important, if people came and it'd been freezing cold and raining, that we at least were able to offer them a cup of tea, or they could sit in the sofa if they needed to for a while, and that we were there also for them to talk to. I think that's increasingly something that people have interest. They actually want to talk to the artists who have made the work and find out all sorts of things. And it's really good as an artist as well to actually have that opportunity to talk to people who are interested enough to come along and maybe look at the things that you've made and may have thoughts about them. It's our way really of checking that we're communicating in the way that we think we are, and if we're not, why has that happened, and what things are there that maybe have triggered different kinds of responses than you might have expected.
Yes, I mean, that's very interesting with art particularly, isn't it? How one makes art, and then how it's received by the audience. Mm. And there, everybody's got a different interpretation. Mm. And of course, it's all so subjective, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you have any feedback that was challenging to accept?
Challenging. Sometimes, you know, people bring up subjects that you might not have thought of yourself. And that's one of the things that, especially when you've trained as an artist, that you're actually taught to expect, that you bring your artwork to a point where you have decided that it is at a point where it has a form of communication that is valid enough to show to other people, and will potentially have a meaningful experience for both them and for you. And you have to be able to actually let it go. My husband, who shows as well, his artist's name is Albedo Mars, is probably like the best and most extreme example of this, in that he is absolutely, completely immersed and enjoys the process of making art. But when it actually comes to the point where it's finished, he has literally no interest in it whatsoever. So it's up to me to sort of sort it out and make sure that people see the ones that he thinks might, you know, might be okay for the public to actually see.
And is he interested of in any kind of feedback or criticism, or has he moved on to the point where he's on to the next thing?
He usually has moved on to the next thing, but I have to say he really, really enjoyed the experience as well. I mean, his background is that he was tutor in fine art at Oxford University for a very long time, many years, 20 years, and also taught in quite a few prestigious institutions, including ones abroad like the San Francisco Art Institute. So he is very used to consulting and talking and lecturing about, and also looking after students up to, you know, a really high level, getting them ready, really, for the professional art world. So he is definitely used to having those kinds of conversations. But it's just when you choose to do that for your own work, which is always really interesting. But he absolutely loved it as well. I think both of us felt that the reception in particular from locals was so fantastic, and absolutely we were made to feel so welcome, to feel actually really a great part of the community. And that's very important for us because we live here. So the fact that we had over 50% of our audience as locals who are saying, we'd love to see something like this again, we're just really interested in what you're doing, this was like a really important, probably the most important bit of feedback for us.
Yeah. So, because you're an ex-student of the Ruskin School of Drawing and Fine Art, the Oxford University yourself, you were there, and you studied at the Royal College of Art. That's an impeccable pedigree for an artist, isn't it?
It was something... It's really fantastic. It was an amazing time of my life as well. You know, I devoted 7 years of my life to training to be a professional artist in a whole areas of mixed media, and went very quickly into digital artwork and animation and video, which then led on to my parallel career, which is digital learning design, which it isn't very far apart. I know it sounds like it is, but it isn't, because one of the commitments I had as a result of attending those really fantastic institutions was I had really brilliant teaching. I experienced fantastic training and coaching. And it's something that, you know, I've got an equal commitment to within my career. I think it's really important. Education at all ages, at all levels, is something that you need to think about even when you are operating mainly as an artist, because that, as I said, that is a form of communication, and there are people who will benefit from what you're doing, and it's a sort of legacy in a way that I feel strongly is important to carry on in all sorts of different ways. Create those moments for people in all sorts of different ways.
You're obviously in a very good, strong position where you have a home that you can open as a gallery. You're married to a fellow artist who understands what the work, you know, your work and how the process of making it and what you're going through. And I'm just thinking, how do you think for other people who perhaps don't have as many resources to take on the mantle being an artist in today's society? Do you think it is possible, unless you've got, say, a second income, for example?
I think it's possible, but it's really difficult. I'm not going to pretend. I still run adult art workshops, and I'm very nosy. I like to know why people might have come for a workshop, particularly when a workshop of mine, because I usually have a description in it that makes people realise that maybe we're going to be discussing things, we're not just going to be maybe teaching people, you know, how to use different kinds of equipment, and that there may be a pushing of concepts and a thought process that we go through. And one of the things that I always like to bring in is how can we make this practically possible for you within your own home? One of the things that I usually end up talking about, and I have to say I have no idea, but I'm within my experience of running many workshops, women are the worst at this, of actually making space for yourself. within your own home to actually make artwork in a way that suits you and is makes it possible.
The making makes space, both metaphorically and physically, you mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Making that time in the week and also making that space within your own home, not necessarily having to have a space that you always have to tidy away. And even if that's something small. So at the moment, yes, I mean, I'm in an amazing position and our house is very exciting, which is one of the reasons why we threw it open, because for the first time ever, both my husband and I have actually had what I call proper space to make work and display it. But before that, when we were in Hastings, we had a house where I make installations, sculpture installations, and in order to actually have a piece of work of mine even happen, I had to literally clear a whole room out of absolutely everything, clean it, tidy it, maybe even paint it up a little bit, set up the installation, photograph it, video it, take it all down and put it all back the way it was before. And that's a question of taking time off work to do that. There's quite a lot of planning to do it. So you can imagine the pace of making work slows down really significantly when you're doing something like that. And also it's very expensive for people to rent studios outside of the home, studio space as well, if they really don't have any space at home. I think I've noticed on the island there's some really, really good offers actually of studio space and, you know, good professional studio space around and about, but it's still all those extra costs mount up.
And also finding a gallery, I assume, perhaps if you haven't got the type of CV you have, even though people are producing a fantastic work, would you say it's harder for people to find gallery space if they don't have that kind of credentials behind them?
It depends what it is that you're making and what you want to do. For me, it's definitely, if you want to have an agent and a gallery who represents you, I think it doesn't matter what your credentials are, that is always going to be really, really difficult because you're entering into, in effect, the art business world. But there are a lot of examples now where you can show your work online. You can have a fantastic portfolio, in effect, online. I do all sorts of things, not just through websites. You can look at other artists' websites. Often they're very, very simple and they're simply set up, sometimes set up with free website software. Or you can set up a Facebook page for yourself, which is very nice because you can create albums, you can still make it look really good, you can tell people of events where things are going to happen, and you can start building an audience in a way who can give you feedback there straight away. So I know that online space isn't exactly the same as a physical space. I'm the first person to say that I love to see things in the flesh. There's a very different experience to seeing things online.
It's far more visceral, isn't it?
It is.
To be there, yeah.
But, I mean, if you're living on the Isle of Wight, I think there's an awful lot of opportunities to display and show work in group shows, particularly if you're interested in selling it. What we're actually doing within our own home is something different from that. I think for us, it's really important for us to create, in effect, a thinking space. And this comes, again, very much back from my education background. There was an artist teacher called Anton Ehrenzweig who taught in Goldsmiths in the 1960s. And he was noticing that sketchbooks, increasingly, they were asking students to put in their sketchbooks to be assessed as part of their portfolio, as well as their actual finished artwork. And suddenly the role of the sketchbook changed. It became something that we were all used to seeing. So it changed from being something that you could think in and that you could explore, and maybe it was something more private, to something that was on display. And he devised a whole series of lessons called the Thinking Book, which actually brought the sketchbook back into the realm of the artist being able to think through it. And I think what we're doing with Art House Life at 35 Madeira Road is we're creating, in effect, a thinking book space where you're not really showing something that is there for sale or showing something for people to think about, to be able to discuss, potentially to be able to contribute and collaborate with.
I was just going to say, so as a thinking space, do you see your home, 35 Madeira Road, as being just for you and Albedo Mars to work in and think in, or is it something you see as growing and embracing other artists?
We see it primarily as something that where we have that space for us because we've needed it ourselves, but absolutely we are collaborating with other artists. In fact, we're actually we've already fixed our next Ventnor Fringe show, which will be a collaboration with a really interesting artist from San Francisco called Jeremy Morgan, who is an abstract landscape artist who's very well known in China. He has lots of shows in China. He's also an absolute expert on very modern contemporary paint, and he does brilliant talks about that, which is really, really fascinating. Different ways of using all sorts of very new acrylic paints, for example. And we took him to Alum Bay about a year or so ago, and he was just so stunned by the place, and he's made a whole load of work actually responding to Alum Bay. So
for those that don't know, that's where the coloured sands are.
Yes.
So it's quite and the sea is so blue there.
Isn't
and the
it?
Colours come, it's very special, beautiful place. Yeah,
so he's going to be our feature for Ventnor Fringe 2018.
Wow.
We'll collaborate, do complementary works with him, but he's going to be our kind of main feature. And also, we had at least four or five different visiting artists during Ventnor Fringe this year who were really interested in potentially collaborating with as well. So we're in touch with those. What we want to say to people is we're going to be, obviously because it's our home, we're going to be open maybe like 2-3 maximum 4 times a year, because we actually have to live there and we also have to make work.
Mm-hmm.
We are really interested in also planning future collaborations. I'd love to do a really experimental printmaking show, for example, which I don't think I'll have time to do next year, but certainly I'd be thinking about that the year after. And also there's a wonderful female Icelandic artist that I want to work with who does really extraordinary things with felt, and I think that will be of great interest to the island because it's so strong in its craft.
Absolutely,
specialisms.
Yeah.
And she's a very fascinating artist from Iceland who I was at Oxford with, and I'd really be interested in bringing her over and maybe talking to some of the craftspeople here.
Yeah, and what about working with other artists in the bigger sense of the word, so sort of singers, songwriters,
yes,
musicians, spoken word artists, that sort of thing? Is that something that would interest you?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because as an installation artist, other forms other than just those things that are visual and tangible become really, really important. So yes, we really want to work with other performers. I've done quite a lot with the Gerwood Gallery, and we quite often used to organise for it, which is in Hastings, and we quite often used to invite dancers and performers to respond to artworks that were coming up within an exhibition. And also I've worked with Medina College already, an amazing group of very young artists there, to create soundscapes for my show in Key Arts. But also it's a great space for maybe creating intimate experimental performances as well. Ventnor Exchange already do this, and they do this fantastically, but I know there's always it's always nice to offer opportunities to other people who would like to try out different kinds of performances, maybe before going on to do them properly at Ventnor Exchange or Key Arts or further off the island.
A sort of preview space.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like a
absolutely
working process. That would be really,
yes,
nice, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Because having visited the space, it's very light and airy, and huge windows overlooking the sea. It is a very special place, and I think because it's not a gallery, it's a home, but it is a gallery. It has a very unique feel, doesn't it?
Yes, and it feels very comfortable to,
yes,
us. I think it's strange sometimes for when they walk in, because it does sort of look like it does really look like a house on the outside. And they come in and suddenly everything's opened up. And then on the left-hand side, you've got very much our main living space, which is quite open, and we have our kitchen, and we have the cooker there, and we've opened up, so there's lots of sofas and things. So there is a more comfy space, which actually I was holding the family drop-in workshops there, and I was thinking initially maybe of setting up tables actually in the two, what I call the two gallery rooms, but it really, really worked actually having the family drop-ins in the family room, because they were just completely comfortable. You know, everybody was, the parents could sit on the sofas, the children could sit around the big table, so it's, I think it offers quite a lot of opportunities to performers who, like myself, respond very acutely to different kinds of environments and spaces and want to create those kind of different kinds of emotive responses. There's about five or six different areas within the bottom of the house which could potentially be used. And I think it would just be really fascinating to see how other people use them.
And I think it's got a feel of being, because it's a home, it has a feeling of being a very safe space in which to experiment, which I'm assuming is very important.
Yes.
For making work and not being afraid to make mistakes and put yourself out there.
Absolutely. In the conversations that we had, and we also had a really nice sort of Ventnor Fringe family sort of pre-fringe sort of beer and veggie chili night before it all opened and the madness happened, and we had lots of the contributors coming, not just to see the house but also for us to meet them and to meet interesting people, and that they all had different kinds of responses, but the main thing that they felt was, I think, was that my husband and I were really, and my daughter as well, who's also an amazing artist even though she's young, were very sympathetic and interested in what they were doing, and that's not that, that's because we are we love the arts in all forms, and so any idea of having things in the house is just absolutely amazing. You know, where we can, we try and go and see things, but even better if it's in your own home.
Indeed. And you were very sympathetic to me when I was interviewing there, because I was conducting on my mobile phone, which wasn't ideal, and without a microphone, so you were holding, you just kind of involuntarily leant forward and held up my arm as it was tiring. So thank you so much for that. It spoke volumes about the kind of person you are. So more from Jo after this short break, when we'll be talking about art, we'll be talking about motherhood and her plans for the future.
Stay social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Jo Nellis, and my very special guest, artist Jo Corey. Welcome back, Jo.
Thank you.
Now, before the break, we were talking about all things art, making work, and how your home is your exhibition space and the place that you create and the place that you invite people to come and see the work and talk about the work. So, and also collaborating with our artists in the widest sense of the word, so not other only painters and drawers and photographers, but also people who are in spoken word and theatre, music, all that kind of. So just fantastic thing in your plans for the Ventnor Fringe 2018. So that's really thinking ahead.
It is. I mean, we've got a few shows in our head, to be honest, partly because my husband has been working pretty much non-stop for the last 15 years on all sorts of kinds of work in his spare time while we've both been working on learning design projects. We do quite a lot of work together, and just has been wanting not to show anything for a while until he felt that he was ready really to show it. So we've got a lot of work, interesting work from him, and also I had planned lots and lots of things that I wanted to do from the first moment really that I had my daughter Isabel, and I used to keep a notebook, well, I still do keep a notebook, and write things down, that ideas and things that still sort of interested me, because, you know, the practicalities of, you know, when you have a child, you know, for both parents, is that, you know, you need to spend that time on them, and you need to look after them in all sorts of different ways, and you need to give them that sort of time, space and attention to nurture them because you've chosen to have them, etc. And then that sometimes does take away from the time that you used to spend completely indulging yourself with your own Indeed. Kind of creative pursuits. But that doesn't mean to say that suddenly you're giving up or you're not working on it. I mean, I in fact feel like I continue to work all the way through when Isabel was young, probably all the way up till about 9 or 10 years old.
She's 15 now.
She's 15, yeah. Nearly 16. And certainly since she's been going to secondary school and become a lot more independent, particularly here on the island, the island's been absolutely wonderful for allowing her to sort of grow in her independence from us and everything else. The island's just really, really good, a really good safe place to do that. And she's been attending Medina School, which has been a really good school for her. It's so since then, I've actually been able to physically make a lot more work. I started doing it just before we came to the island, and I did some work for the Gerwood Sussex Prize, where I was trying out some paper sculpture work, which I'd done from a very young student and had been thinking I wanted to resurrect, because I'd actually done a lot of photography when I was at Royal College. But I kept going back to this sculptural form that I developed with gum strip paper, which I talked about incessantly at the beginning of this year, because mm-hmm. the show at Key Arts was all made out of this. But, you know, a lot of the pieces in Key Arts were pieces that I'd actually planned and thought about and sort of landed on while I was actually looking after my daughter when she was young. You know what sticks at that point. You know what you start thinking. Yes, I am completely obsessed with this and I have to do this this piece, and I'm going to find my opportunity at some point to actually do it. So by the time I actually did it, you know, I was very clear and really concise and really positive and confident that this was a piece of work that I actually wanted to make.
Yes, fully formed and...
Yes, yeah. It was. It had all been formed, and I'd had that thinking space in effect. It was quite good at one level that having my daughter in effect, that it slowed me down a little bit, because you tend to use your time, you know, very, very carefully when you have children. As an artist, you don't want to waste any of it. Sometimes that can be quite difficult. You go to a phase where you literally feel like you're not actually doing anything. But as long as you think, no, this is my thinking space, this is my planning space, this is my time to maybe sort of chew on the cud a little bit, it becomes a really, really formative phase. And that phase in my life really is doing me a lot of good now. There are a lot of things that I'm able to actually make now that I probably planned good 10 to 15 years ago, and I'm now able to make them.
Yeah, and I think when you have a child, I think, you know, it's a real privilege, and it teaches you things, even though you think you are the nurturer, you're the teacher. Mm. In fact, you're being taught huge life lessons along the way, aren't you?
It is. I mean, I remember, you know, when Izzy was first born, we all, you know, all of us who've been lucky enough to have a child, remember that time when they're just born and you look at them for the first time. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to spend the whole rest of my life getting to know you. It just sort of flashed through my head. And that's been very much the case within our relationship. It's about, you know, me finding out what she's like, and she always surprises me. She's a very insightful person. I'm not going to embarrass her anymore, but I do actually completely respect the things that she says artistically in all sorts of different ways. She also, my husband talks through his work with her as well, and she herself is forming as an artist. It's not something we tried really hard not to inflict it on her.
Why was that? Why?
I was really worried about putting her off, actually, to be honest. You know, sometimes you can immerse somebody too much and then that's part of your parents' identity rather than you finding your own.
Yes.
But she very much has her own artistic pursuits and her own ideas and the things that she wants to do, and you know, she is the one who's been really clear that she'd like to go forward and study art at college, and is working very hard at the moment on her art GCSE to make sure that she can start on the pathway towards doing that.
Oh, good luck with that, Izzy. And do you ever make work about her or about motherhood?
I think aspects of it are coming through a lot more than I actually realised. So again, because I haven't for quite some time had, I would say, public feedback to my work, you know, when I did the Key Art Show, there was one piece in particular that a couple of people came up to me and said, I don't know why, but that really made me want to cry. And then also an overwhelming response to people where they just said they wanted to touch everything. Mm. So I sort of intellectualized the touch part, first of all, by thinking, well, everything that was visual only came about because I was actually touching it, because I was moulding and yes. casting. So anything that you could see had only happened as a result of touch. But then I also thought, but this actually was something that I realised was very important when I had Isabel. I know it sounds like it wasn't an epiphany, but, you know, children really, they want to be cuddled, they want to be touched. There's sort of different kinds of touch as well that happen, and also you're teaching them about that as well. So, you know, that physical intimacy of touch is very much there when you're a parent. It can happen as well, I think, as well when people work a lot with old people, whether they're parents or not, they realise that point of touch is really, really important for people's well-being. And then the part where people, two people, that's why I noticed it in particular, said that they felt really emotional, maybe wanted to cry. It was a piece where it was actually about a female body, but embracing, like in an embracing kind of position, but it was also quite a powerful female position. And that did make me think quite a lot, you know, because we have maybe female icons that we're used to that are maybe related to religious icons, but then the actual position that I did was maybe echoing the male religious position, but it was actually a female body, and very right. much a female body. It was unmistakably so. Mm-hmm. So I did sort of think that maybe there was this thing where there was a feeling of mothering coming through there, even though I didn't really intend it to be. I think, you know, part of my identity is to be a mother, so if my work is reflecting things to myself, it's going to come through.
Yeah. And do you think, I mean, I was reading quite a bit recently about this, I don't know, devaluing degrees, because yes. the argument is so many more people are getting them, therefore the workplace is going to be flooded with them. And this notion of, particularly in the creative industries, students leaving at school and going on to an apprenticeship where perhaps they do a day release for a degree. What's your opinion as a working artist, and having gone through Ruskin, Oxford University and Royal College of Art yourself, having had that tremendous experience from a state school, what's your thoughts on that, Jo?
I have really a lot of strong thoughts about it. One of them is, as you pointed out, I came from, you know, state school. I was born on the island, but we left when I was about four or five when my grandfather died. Both my grandparents taught in schools on the island. I came from a very large family, the eldest of seven children. We didn't have very much, you know, in the way of equipment or anything. And I would say I went to, you know, really normal state schools in Southwest Wales. There were key teachers there who were very encouraging and made me feel like I could potentially apply for those, particularly for Oxford University. I never would have thought of actually going there. But one of the things that was really important about that was that I was able to do a foundation course in a college before I went to university and then go on to the Royal College of Art. And all of that was paid through grants. I never forgot, and I still never forget, that Wales is the place that actually paid for my education. I completely and utterly appreciate that. And there are some things that I've done already to support certain Welsh groups to, in a way, feel like I can pay back and say thank you for doing that. Nowadays, there's that extra decision, which is a very significant decision that young people have to make, which is, you know, do I want to pursue this level of education and then have this absolutely massive debt, which is also incurring, you know, a lot of interest along the way? I would completely be thinking about that myself if I was back in that situation. So I just think there are a lot of big decisions where people are then going, well, then I need to choose something that I feel comfortable that I'm going to get a job with. The one thing I would say in pursuing the arts is that when you pursue the arts, even when I did it, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I never expected to get a job straight away directly as a result of it. So it's the sort of thing, you know, that when you're actually pursuing, it's a very special time in your life. You have that space to actually think about things that you're going to do, and you hope that you're going to be able to pursue creativity in some form within your career afterwards, whether it's directly as a professional artist or whether it is something that draws on those particular abilities. For example, you have to learn a lot about critical analysis. You have to really learn about quite sophisticated forms of communication, understanding different kinds of audiences, alternative ways of communication, you know, whether you're a painter or whether you're doing something through photography or sound, you know, you're communicating in different kinds of ways. So there are skill bases which you learn through arts-based subjects, which are often very, very useful in the workplace. I know which ones I've used for my much more traditional forms of learning design and careers when with all sorts of business clients. So I'm a very strong supporter of us going back to a grant system. I think taking creative subjects away, obviously, from schools is completely disastrous. I think often people don't think about subjects actually complementing each other. For example, I would strongly, if I had my own education establishment, I would have art students absolutely next door to the IT, for example, and also to sound, because when you're using those skills in the real world, for example, if you're creating e-learning or digital learning design, I have to work as a learning designer with artists, animators, sound people, coders, developers, project managers, as well as client-facing account managers. We all have to work together. We all have an absolutely equal role in that. So suddenly dividing things off as one thing being more important than the other absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, makes no sense at all within our economy. Each thing has its place, even though sometimes it can't actually be stated. And I have never, ever been out of work, and that is fundamentally because they say, oh, great, you've got a creative background, you'll be able to think creatively. Because at the end of the day, even if you're producing something that's a really simple piece of e-learning for maybe a few thousand people, which is teaching them about health and safety, you've got to in some way find it really engaging and impactful, because you don't want people just to look through it and then forget it all in 5 minutes. So that's often, you know, where your role as a creative steps in.
Absolutely. And how do you, mentioned dealing with account managers. So they're the people who sort of, they're the middlemen, aren't they, between the creative and the client, and interpret it and represent stuff. How do you find taking their feedback? Because often they perhaps struggle with the more artistic side?
I think mainly they're always having, we all have our primary concerns. So a business account manager, certainly within my industry, is absolutely looking at the budget, absolutely aware of what's been pre-agreed. But the one thing that's very good about the company that I'm working at the moment is we always involve what we call primary consultants right at the beginning of a project. So there is some aspect of looking at the quality of the learning design and the creativity right there at the beginning, so that the agreements that are in place allow space for that actually to then be developed with the client afterwards, with their content and to interpret it creatively. So sometimes they're the ones who maybe don't have the great job of saying, you know what, we'd love to do that, but actually, if we do that, we're all totally going to lose money on this. And then that's when, as a problem solver, you have to think, right, well, how can I get the best quality of, you know, while using what we've got? Or so you have to just think a bit more inventively. So I think if you just take it, right, this is a challenge that we've got to work out, it can be actually very, very interesting. No project is the same. I'd say there are lots and lots of jobs within the learning design industry, and you can do a lot of it from home. So if people are looking for a career, I can say I can absolutely recommend it.
And that's something that is only going to grow, presumably.
Yes, absolutely. It's still very strong within the UK as well. I think some of the work that we maybe have been, we've been very much used, actually UK has been very much used as a base of excellence for learning design for Europe and UK for a really, really long time, partly because so many global companies got set up, you know, in London and other areas. So it's something that, although it is going to be affected potentially by Brexit, it's not as significantly affected as some of the other industries. UK is still seen as an excellence for education. This is coming up as well, I think, quite recently. I was looking at something in Facebook today about universities still being seen as a point of educational excellence for international students. And I think it's something we should cherish and keep within the UK. It's not something we should think about throwing away.
I was reading some, you know, there's a school of thought now that's saying, why not just have university there for the top 10% of the students, the top performing 10%, and leave the rest to pursue more vocational pursuits?
So, yes, and I've heard it described like that as well. It's highly elitist, obviously.
Absolutely.
I think particularly if you come from a certain area, like I came from an area that wasn't necessarily known for, you know, producing the so-called top students from, you know, from private schools. I've worked in lots of different kinds of schools and lots of different kinds of contexts as well. And I would say it's quite, going to a private school does not necessarily mean to say that you will actually be a top performer. In fact, while I was at Oxford University, there was a survey done there. We're looking at the fine arts students because there was a big question about whether we should even be given something called a degree as a fine art degree, you know, because it was just a play subject, of course, not as serious as the others. And then when they did just a survey of the qualifications that we had when we actually came in to Oxford University, we were noticing that they were substantially higher level than many of the others, in other subjects. So, you know, all I can say is don't make assumptions that just because, you know, if your child is thinking of studying art, it's not a waste of their brain to pursuing it. In fact, quite often it makes you quite ubiquitous. You know, I wouldn't say I was a jack of all trades, but certainly I would say I was trained in a way that made me really agile and really flexible. And those are two qualities that really, really are needed now. So in effect, I was trained quite well for the future digital workplace.
A world which you've conquered, clearly.
Not conquered. a word in which I exist and I really enjoy and I think is really relevant, because a lot of my audience is going to come from the world of work. And it's really important for me to, as an artist, to understand how to speak to them and how to communicate them and to empathise as well.
And it's all about problem solving and keeping an open mind, isn't
it?
And like you say, talking, so it's about communication primarily, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And hitting that, well, not hitting the mark, because everybody's going to interpret your work in a slightly different way.
Yes.
It's got to be that, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It is. I think, to go back to your question about whether university is for the top 10% and vocational for everybody else, I think in a way that also sometimes devalues some of the vocational apprenticeships and things, which can be really, really good and really high quality. I just think that maybe we need to think about universities and vocational work in a different way, that we need to just think about it holistically as what is the best education that we can provide for young people for our future, because it's really, really important.
Absolutely.
Things really change so rapidly now. When I was starting out at, you know, as a self-employed learning designer, I worked out that probably I have to learn one really majorly brand new piece of software maybe every 3 or 4 years. That has steadily increased, that time has shortened, and I would say that now, you know, 15, 20 years on, still doing it, I'm learning a brand new thing probably twice a year.
And you obviously enjoy that. I can see you are stimulated by it, you're excited by it. It's not just a job, is it?
It isn't. And it's something that now I'm in a position, I have a role now where I'm looking after 450 staff for a company, looking after their learning and development. And that includes young all the way up to senior exec, looking after all their different kinds of learning needs within this particular industry. It's a learning design company. As I said, that's why I have quite strong views on the education, because I see what people are actually coming in with. And I think it's the difference between having a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. Fixed mindset says you have these abilities, they can only be developed in a certain way, or they can't ever be developed, and you're stuck there, and that's what you're doing, and that basically sticks you there for life. Whereas a growth mindset believes that everybody has an ability that can be developed up to a certain point or maybe beyond, and it's actually really, really important in all your dealings, whether it's education or actually in the way that you work with them, that they have that possibility to grow and continue to learn.
That's what I was going to say, that, you know, if you're writing young adults off at 18 or whatever and saying, you know, your A-level results are just quite not up to the mark for university, they're 18. Mm. And I used to teach at Bournemouth University, and when I used to have the first years, that three-year period when they were going through their degrees of growth, you know, the child, in effect, that arrived as a first year and then left, you know, with an amazing result, and how they'd come on, how they had become adults. And you think, it's all this testing and writing children off at different levels, isn't it? And
I
still think, you know, a lot of people are still children at 18. Mm. In fact, I'd argue I'm still a child at 58, so there you go. But that's not an insult. It's just saying allow people to move at their own pace.
Yes.
And perhaps the opportunity to go to university and think in that way and have those influences and that education, it's going to have an impact, isn't it, if they embrace it and want it enough?
It is. And you can use me as an example. I did not pass all my A-levels with flying colours first time round. I needed to resit. I decided to resit, actually. And my foundation course in art, which I did for a year at college after that, was a decision I made at that point, because I actually felt like I just needed a break and I needed to think about what I really wanted to do. Because before that, I'd been thinking about doing architecture. And I was still really interested in it, but I just had a feeling that maybe I was rushing into something that perfectly matched my maths, English and art A-levels, and it wasn't necessarily correct, and that was proved right. So I just think people should absolutely be encouraged to work at their own pace. They shouldn't ever write themselves off at any age. I have a lot of people in my adult art workshops who've done degrees after, you know, work after retiring, and have absolutely loved it. The one really brilliant thing about the British education system is that it is very open to actually learning and getting qualifications at any point in time in your life. And I have to say, that is the really, really, we're all very good at criticising it, but it's actually the really, really good thing about our education system.
Yeah, and it, you know, I went to school with a boy, and I won't mention his name, but we used to mess about in the language lab together. We were rubbish. And he failed all his A-levels. But like you said, he went back and he resat. And he's now a professor at a university. And that, you know, that just kind of blows me away, the fact that he is a prof.
Yes.
And nobody would have pegged him for that. But, he, you know, he was a bright boy. He just chose not to really do very much with it when he was at school.
And a lot of universities really like what they call post-A-level students, because they know exactly what you've got, they know what you've been doing in between, They know where you are. And sometimes when you're a bit older, when you do those interviews, you just have something that you feel like you're something concrete that helps you within that interview process, instead of just saying, well, I'm hoping this and my teacher says that and, you know, maybe I'll have that. So don't worry if you don't go through the so-called standard procedure that you think you have to go through with school. You know, you could actually find a way that suits you a lot better.
Yes, and I think that's something that we, like you say, we're becoming really good at in this country, and is in embracing that and accepting that and not making judgments over that. Well, it's been an absolute joy, as ever, talking to you today, Jo Corey. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your time too. It's been really fun.
And
thanks,
best
Jo.
Of luck with all your endeavours at Madeira Road.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful bank holiday weekend. I hope the sun shines on you. And next week is another opportunity to listen to my chat with Admiral Nurse Jill George. Speak to you very soon at the new time on September the 8th of 6 p.m. Okay, take care now. Bye-bye. www.vectisradio.com